Saturday will be that glorious time of year where college basketball and college football overlaps. The Rebels getting into practice for basketball on Saturday, but more importantly, opening league play with San Jose State. We'll talk about both today on the Rebel Room. I'm Case Kiefer with Mike Cremala and Ray Brewer. Also wanted to plug, if you want more basketball, like I said, we'll just briefly talk about it today, but next Tuesday at 11 a.m. on Facebook Live, Mike will be answering all your questions. So ask Mike on Facebook Live. And guys, I got to say, this overlap we go through every year, it feels like most of the time everyone's just basketball, basketball, basketball. The football season's already basically in the rear view. I think, for the lack of a better word, the ridiculousness of this UNLV football season, I feel like it's not as strongly that way this year. I mean, I think every one of UNLV's games has gotten some buzz. Obviously, I mean, they're going to be known for a long time for the Howard loss, but then to come back and destroy Idaho gave some people some hope they'd have some chance in the Mountain West. And then, not that we thought they had a chance at Ohio State, but to fall down 44-7, I think that also got people talking. When, I mean, Ohio State the week before struggled with Army, so not the prettiest display in Columbus. Mike, you've been there all along the step of the way. Am I right here? Are people still kind of intrigued and saying what's going on with this football team, or is it about to be all basketball?
No, I think that the football team is in a not a great position, but they're in a pretty good position for the rest of the year. They're, you know, 1-1. They started out, which I think most people had them pegged at. Most people had them pegged to lose at Ohio State. So that wasn't, you know, it was a big loss. They weren't, you know, that competitive in the game. But it's not the kind of loss that's going to drive people away from the team, because I think most rational, reasonable people sort of expected that kind of outcome. So it's not, you know, going to drive people off the bandwagon. If you believed in this team, or if you were excited about the potential for a bowl berth or a successful season, you know, you're still feeling that way. Even after Ohio State, you're still feeling like that can happen. So I think, you know, we haven't, I haven't felt like a lot of people have given up on the season yet. I feel like people are still invested and still think that this team can make it to the finish line.
Yeah, for me, I think two differences from previous years to this year is not only were the Rebels at the launch of the basketball season a one-win team or a no-win team, the way the schedule looked the rest of the way, you knew they had no chance to really do anything of significance. And this year, you look at the schedule, Mike and Case, starting Saturday with San Jose State, a very winnable opponent. They just lost by, you think UNLV fell into a hole at Ohio State. San Jose State at Utah State was a brutal hole. So they have a very winnable opponent. I'm never in the history of my life going to say the Rebels are a guaranteed winner, because I lived through Howard. I lived through Northern Arizona. I lived through Southern Utah. But you look at the way the schedule pans out, and there's a lot of winnable games there to get to that magic number of six, and which is a bowl berth. So I think we have dual excitement.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually. I think the future schedule does play into it, just because I can't remember, and I'm not really that enthused by the way that they've opened the season. I don't think anyone could be, but I don't remember a time when you look down the schedule and you're thinking, you know, there's just about any game they could put together a really good performance and win. There's nothing left that would be absolutely shocking. I mean, that being said, I still think, you know, the favorite is what they – I still – if I had to guess, I still say they probably only get to 5 wins. But there's not a single game you go – even San Diego State, they're getting San Diego State at home. They're ranked. They're great. But if you put together a really strong performance, I think you can even give them – surprise them a little bit. And that looks like by far the toughest game left, maybe at Air Force, who is looking good as well. But I think those two, if those are your toughest games left, like you said, you do have a chance at getting somewhere.
Yeah, I think that the key portion of the schedule is still a few weeks away. They've got this game against San Jose State coming up, which they, I mean, you hesitate to say this with UNLV football, but that's a game that they should win. I mean, that's at home against an opponent that really can't stop them defensively. UNLV should be able to handle them and win that game. Then they've got San Diego State, which is, you know, they're going to be underdogs in that game. But after the San Diego State game, you've got at Air Force, home against Utah State, at Fresno State, home against Hawaii. That's the key stretch of the season. You've got those four games. UNLV probably has to win three of them to give themselves a chance at finishing 6-6. You win those three of those four, that gets you to 5 wins with, you know, BYU, New Mexico, and Reno to close out the season. You got to win one of those.
I know I've always said that I like UNLV to beat BYU, and the fact that BYU struggled offensively, granted they've played a much higher caliber of opponent, LSU, Utah, but I still think UNLV more than ever has a chance to beat BYU. The one thing that I'm worried about in terms of getting to six, if I'm a UNLV fan, is the last two seasons they've had winnable games down the stretch, and they've just, you know, lack of player depth at certain positions had just worn on them, and they closed awfully. And you look at, you know, your marquee position for this team is tailback, right? They're cashing their checks on running the rock, and with Charles Williams out for the year, now Lexington has been nothing short of spectacular. You know, broke a long one against Ohio State. We really saw his speed, you know, against an opponent who has some speed in the secondary. But we just look at his height and weight, whatever, it's 5'8", 170, give or take on both. And is he going to hold up for the long haul of the season? Is he going to be the feature back? Is he going to be the guy that gets you to your bowl game? Because, you know, Rodgers, for as heralded as he was, he's still a freshman. We saw him struggle mightily throwing the ball against Ohio State. Granted, good competition. But, you know, it's how are they going to hold up a month from now?
Yeah, I think that's – once Charles Williams went down, that became one of the biggest question marks. Is because, I mean, if you look at the skid, the rest of the way out, San Diego State, maybe a good defense, but none of these teams you would expect. You know, Lexington Thomas should be able to, with this offensive line, be able to run and make some pretty good yardage the rest of the way. There's no team that's going to dominate UNLV in the trenches left on the schedule. The question is, he's 170 pounds. Can he play the next eight games being your number one back? When Williams went down, I asked Lexington Thomas, you know, you're the number one back now. Can you think you can handle that kind of workload? And then I asked him, you know, what was the most carries you've ever had in a game, like even going back to high school or Pop Warner or whatever? And he said 27, which I was expecting, like, yeah, there was this game in high school where I had, you know, 50 carries and, you know, 500 yards, something like that. But, I mean, 27 is as high for his entire career. So he's not a guy that's used to being, you know, banged on, you know, play after play after play. So, I mean, that's the big question. How long can he last? And as long as he's out there, I expect UNLV to be able to run on these teams that are on the rest of the schedule.
Can I throw out a dumb idea? Obviously, I'm not a football coach. I do think I have a pretty intimate knowledge of UNLV football, A, because I have an above-average relationship with Sanchez from when he was at Gorman, and B, I've followed the program forever, and I'm born and raised here. But I think your second-best running back is Kurt Palandek. Would you say, hey, Kurt, we're going to give you a few carries? You know, he's a senior. He could hold on to the ball. Would there be a scenario where you allow him and Armani in the game at the same time?
Well, Palandek is a good runner as a quarterback. He's fast. He's elusive. He's really good at, you know, finding angles and getting to the sideline. The thing is, it's running as a quarterback and running as a running back are just two different things. Like, running back is – Running and being elusive is half the battle, and then the other half is you need the vision. Like, it's just different reading those holes and, you know, reading the defense.
Getting,
you know,
between the tackles.
Yes.
Yeah, that Mike took the words out of my mouth. That was the same thing I would say. I mean, you need someone that's going to step up and kind of help take some of this load off Lexington Thomas. That 27 carries, that's crazy to me too. I don't know if it's Kurt Palandek. It's such a different thing. But I mean, maybe you do need to get creative and think of something like that, because like you guys both said, I think there needs to be someone else there. To illustrate further what you said about how, though, you never want to say a game is a definite win or something they have to win, this San Jose State game, they're a 13.5-point favorite. Quick trivia question. When do you guys think was the last time UNLV was a two-touchdown favorite against a Mountain West opponent?
I had no idea.
Oh, I'd buy whoever's closer a bag of chips.
I'm going to 1994?
Well, the league wasn't around in 94.
Oh, yeah. You said Mountain
West.
Yeah,
I should have said Mountain West.
Thinking,
I gave it away.
I was thinking league opponents. I don't know. When was the last time that they were...
Well, I know when
West.
I know when John Robinson was the coach that UNLV had some high end players, you know, Jeremy Rudolph at running back, Jason Thomas at quarterback, and I know that San Diego State was god awful then. Am I hot?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you credit. I guess you win the bag of chips. It was a John Robinson year. 2004, they were a 14-point favorite against Utah State at Sam Boyd Stadium and lost 31-21. But yeah, that's crazy. So this is their, by the odds, their most likely league game to win in 13 years.
Yeah, and it just, you know, I hate to go back to that Howard game, but the way that Howard was able to move the ball in the UNLV defense, you know, you can never say that the Rebels should win or it looks good until the 60 minutes is off the clock and they're holding their helmets in the air singing the fight song.
Yeah, that's the one thing that gives you pause. Is San Jose State, bad defense, but UNLV is also right down there. I mean, these might be two of the 10 worst defenses in all of Division I football. So it's one of those games where anything could happen. It's like San Jose State may be able to keep pace with UNLV for a little while. If you get a bounce of the ball that goes the wrong way, this could end up being another Howard-type situation where, you know, Howard, you know, they gave away basically 14 points off of turnovers, you know, big swings. So, yeah, UNLV's got to win it probably on offense. You got to play a clean game. That's you could say that every week. They've got to win it on offense. They can't really afford turnovers. That's their biggest thing
and
every week.
And you never want to let an opponent such as Howard or San Jose State or Northern Arizona or Southern Utah hang around till late, because when you're in the game in the third quarter and then you make a mistake, now you got some problems. So Rebels should be interesting moving forward, but I do think back to the original premise. We've got live action, and it's going to be entertaining to watch, to say the least.
For sure. So San Jose State this Saturday, 7:30 kickoff at Sam Boyd Stadium. A little earlier in the day, I would assume. Basketball getting into practice, and Coach Marvin Minzie's second season. What are we looking for most out of basketball? What are some of the things going into the first practice we need to keep an eye on?
I think one of the biggest questions for the team this year is just, you know, stylistically, style of play. What are they going to try and do? You know, what is Marvin Menzies? What is his philosophy really? Because last year was you kind of get to throw it out. He couldn't really recruit the type of players that he wanted. It was sort of a lost season. This year, he was able to get the guys he went after. He was able to recruit somewhat selectively. So these guys should be better tailored to fit the style that he wants to play. The question is, what is that style going to be? We've seen a couple different versions of Marvin Menzies at New Mexico State. His last stop, he had, you know, about half of his tenure there, they were one of the fastest up-tempo teams in the country, and they made the NCAA tournament that way. And then the second half of his tenure at New Mexico State, they were one of the slowest, most post-heavy, you know, pounding the ball in the paint type of teams in the country. And they won that way. So it's, you know, now he's got some big men here. He's got Brandon McCoy. He's got Shakur Justin now, both highly rated big men. He's got two senior guards that should both be among the best in one of the best backcourts in the Mountain West. So, I mean, how is he going to play it? Are they going to be a slow down, force it into the paint? Are they going to be out and running up tempo? So that type of thing I would be interested in seeing.
You know, I think two things for me is, you know, one, we lived through the 9-1 season last year, and we saw in the media that Menzies wasn't, you know, too eager to open the doors to whether it be post-game interviews after some losses, to practices, to other things. And now this year they're doing slam dunk contests and scrimmages, and they want you here. And so that, to me, is a sign that they have some guys that could actually do something, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, this the first practice of basketball season, you're allowed to start practicing in full 42 days before your first regular season game, which for UNLV falls on this Saturday. And usually their first day of practice is sort of like, it's not really a practice, it's more of like a media day. You know, they open it up, anyone you want to talk to, you can talk, and the coaches and the players are available. They haven't officially announced that it's going to be open to the media yet, so I mean, I'm not certain that it's going to be any different this year yet, but I think it's a good sign that they are bringing back some of the preseason festivities, because that was sort of glaring last year when
they were so bad. They were like, if we could just hide this and get to March and get the season over with, everybody will forget about it. And you have to remember, they were so bad last year, there was literally nobody at the games.
Yeah.
I mean, there was like 6,000 people physically at all these games. And then I guess that brings me to the other thing is, I think this year, guys, we're going to learn about Marvin Menzies. We didn't learn anything about Marvin last year. We don't know what kind of coach he is, if he could coach players of the talent of Brandon McCoy that he showed that he could recruit, right? How's he going to develop those players? how's he going to coach in a game where anybody could win, or where the coach on the other side is better than him in the X's and O's in the final 5 minutes? Okay, because his only previous head coaching experience was at New Mexico State in the WAC, right? You're not coaching against high-quality guys there, and he had better players. So I think we're going to learn a lot about this hire this season when the bullets start flying and UNLV gets into some games. They're obviously expected to be better. You couldn't be much worse than 9 wins. They've got some pieces. The one guy for me that stands out is
Shakur Justin.
Yeah, I'm going to screw that up all year. Here's a guy who put up some monster numbers in JC, right? Leading rebounder in the nation, all JC, every award you could get. And this kid physically, why are you laughing?
You know where I'm going with this.
No, what do you
Anyone
mean?
That's listened to this podcast over the years heard Ray Brewer hating on JUCO players.
I can't stand JUCOs. But this kid, though, Case.
I know, it's just funny for me.
He's one of these guys where it's like, whoa, I'm going to go the other way. I mean, he's built like a brick S house, right?
He's
a healthy-looking kid.
He is.
Okay.
And he's not coming from a... You know, just a run-of-the-mill.
He's not coming from Victor Valley.
He's coming from the premier junior college basketball program in the country, basically. When they play the junior college national championship tournament, they play it at that school. Like, that's where he's coming
from. I hate
JUCOs.
I think it's a – I mean, it's certainly one of the guys to watch and guy to be excited about. I'm not taking anything away from him. I just think it's funny after all the years of Taylor and I ganging up on you for hating JUCO players.
I know. Do you know who Mike's favorite UNLV player is?
I do not.
Oh, come on. Show him the tattoo.
who are you talking about?
Javon Mooring.
Yeah.
I should have known that.
Yeah.
It's been a while. I'm rusty.
Is UNLV relying on him to be as good as he was last year?
I think they're going to rely on him a lot in terms of creating in the backcourt, and I expect him to start and probably be the leading scorer.
Okay. I felt like I was offending like your mother there.
No. I mean,
for me, the guy, I'm still not as sold on him as you are. I think he got a lot of his in games where it morphed into pickup ball because they become meaningless. But I'm going to be interested to see how the offense flows this year, where you have a guy who was your leading toucher, right, and did some creative things. And now you've got some other guys that could play. And I think that having the point guard, Jordan Johnson. Same kid. I suck. God, I'm
no.
so...
No, 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 I mean... The,
I'm
we
embarrassing.
Don't, no,
this is 42 days before the season.
That's representative, because a lot of these... we're expecting this big turnaround from UNLV to maybe win the league this year. Mm-hmm. And we're counting on... a lot of these players who we don't even know, guys that we've never seen, guys that have never played for UNLV, guys that are, complete mysteries at this point. So, I mean, that's kind of representative of, I think, the fans, even the first early part of the season, are going to be Justin Johnson, Braden McCoy. Like, that's you're going to take a little while to get to know these guys.
And, for whatever it's worth, UNLV has never won the league.
And I can't believe last year had to be the first they finished in last, right?
Yeah. I mean, how embarrassing is it when you are finishing below, like, Fresno and Air Force?
I know
Paul George went to Fresno, and I know they won the league a few years ago, but Fresno is such a dog pit, man. To lose to some of these teams is embarrassing.
It was the kind of thing that you have to hang on the administration as a whole, because it's not you can't really just pin it on Marvin Menzies. They may have been able to eke out a couple more games last year if things had gone differently. You can't really hang it on the players, because they didn't put the team together. They're playing as hard as they can. You have to go back years to how they handled the end of Dave Rice's tenure and that coaching system. I mean, that's all the stuff that led to the last place finish. So it's like It is embarrassing, but I don't think it's embarrassing for these players or this current team. It's more embarrassing for the university and the administration as a whole and how they handled it.
For sure, we're wiping the slate clean, but I do want Brewer to have to admit one thing.
This
is a big hit in the argument you used last year when I think you said UNLV on this podcast would not be last, the name on the jersey theory. did not work.
Front of the jersey case. Front of the jersey.
I said the name on the jersey, didn't I?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't say front of the jersey. Oh, gotcha,
front.
Gotcha.
It has to be front. All right.
I also wanted to ask you an interesting thing. Mike said, like you said, you're not as sold on Mooring yet. Mike said he would expect him to be the favorite to be the leading scorer. You agree with that, even though you're not sold on him? Or who, if you're making your prediction right now, who's going to lead the Rebels scoring?
Yeah, and I think kind of maybe by default, because the Jordan Johnson kid is more of a facilitator and a passer. He had like 7 assists a game at Milwaukee. Even though he hasn't played in a year, he's going to be rusty, right? And your wings kind of aren't really established yet. Your big guys are going to – your big guys – I mean, I don't think McCoy's going to have an Anthony Bennett-esque season, right?
We don't know that. I mean, Bennett was – yeah, it's probably safe to say because Bennett ended up being the number one overall pick, and he was great, but
– yeah.
I mean,
but would McCoy be the second choice, though?
I mean, who's going to start on
the wing? If
Menzies
plays that style?
I mean, I don't even think Cyborg sees the court.
That's
right?
Like your one – like. Position that's sort of up for grabs in preseason. You got like Clyburn, got Anthony Smith, who's another JUCO kid.
Clyburn's not. If Clyburn, unless he became great overnight, we've seen him last year. We know he's not in the rotation for me. Not in my rotation.
I think basically, I've said this in some of the roster projections that we've done throughout the offseason. It's whoever can hit 3-pointers is going to play in that spot because that's the thing that they need. More than anything, when you've got McCoy and Justin inside, you need guys that can shoot from the outside to open it up a little. And I think Mooring, last year he led the team in scoring. I would say last year was by default because there was no one else that could, that could score. This year I wouldn't say it would be by default. I think he's just last year a lot of it was on volume. I think if they coach it right, he's got all he's a good shooter. He's a good handler. They can use him on the ball, off the ball. He'll take charges. He'll play defense. He's a good leader. If you coach it right and you get him to shoot a little more selectively, the percentages should go up. I think, 15, 16 points leads the team.
All right. Listen, at least we have action both ways. UNLV football still very much alive to threaten to get to 6. UNLV basketball, a reason to be optimistic. We know we're not going to, cover many 50-point losses like last year. Right?
Exactly. I think you summed it up well there, and that was just a taste of basketball. Again, a reminder, 11 a.m. around then on Tuesday. Ask Mike on the Las Vegas Suns Facebook Live. Talk more about basketball. We'll come back to break down whatever happens in the San Jose State game. Football, we'll try to make this a more consistent thing. For Ray and Mike, I'm Case for the Rebel Room. Thanks for listening.